Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Renowned author, illustrator Mara Kalman's award-winning picture book Looking at Lincoln, based on her 2009 online column for the New York Times, was hailed as an utterly winning tribute. Now, she sheds light on the fascinating life and interests of the Renaissance man who was our third president, with Thomas Jefferson, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Everything. It's a great pleasure to welcome Mara Kalman to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
What got you thinking in the first place about presidents and doing these books specifically for kids?
Well, I had started exploring American democracy and American history for the New York Times, as you mentioned, and that interest really grew into a passion. I knew nothing. I was really a novice in really knowing the history. So the characters and the stories and the nature of democracy being born was all extraordinary to me, and I just fell in love. I fell in love clearly with Lincoln, and with Jefferson as well. Though I would date Lincoln, but Jefferson was a little bit intimidating.
What can you learn about these men of history, especially from not just the research, but from the artistic pursuit, your artistic pursuit?
They were artists as well as politicians. They were, historians and great statesmen. But they loved music and they loved art, and they both read voraciously. Lincoln was a poet. And, of course, Jefferson was interested in absolutely everything, as we say. He was a musician. He practiced his violin 3 hours a day. So they were not in a kind of a pigeonhole of we're politicians and we're creating this country. They were really humanitarians, and that's one of the things that I found out, despite all of the complexities, of course, and contradictions of their lives.
You deal with many of the complexities, especially with Jefferson, in the book. You didn't shy away from that in any way.
Not only did I not shy away from it, I thought there couldn't be a book for children, especially these days, that doesn't discuss with candor but kindness, kind of direct, matter of fact, because there's nothing that children can't understand if you present it in such a way that, they understand complexity and they understand sadness and they understand being mean. So all of these things are part of a human being, and we're very complex people. Children really know that.
Does the art come with the text in the sense of does one follow the other? Is it any number of ways? Is there a formula for you?
I have this fantastically fluid, digressive way of working, which is I get distracted. I see things that are off point. I see images that I love. I saw Lincoln's jacket with the socks in that he used to line his threadbare jacket with his socks. So I knew that would be a painting, and I would write for that. And of course, there's research and there's creating a real manuscript. But as an artist and as a writer, I really can go back and forth, and one informs the other, which is very pleasant.
And through that, you're also learning as you go along, I assume.
I'm always learning. I mean, I still say I know nothing, but I know a little bit more than nothing. But I'm always learning about painting. I'm learning about thinking about humanity and how to think about life and how to think about how do we all live our lives and what's important and what are the great things that people have done and how does that inspire us.
You have, in the book, there's just this, one of my favorite images is of the shoe.
The shoe. I love painting shoes. There isn't a book I have where I don't find a good shoe to paint.
Do you know why that is?
Shoes are a very interesting subject because they contain architecture, history, design, fancifulness, and utility. And those things really interest me. And I love walking. Mobility is really important to me in walking. So, and walking was really important to Jefferson. So I also have his boots in the paint, which is, in the book, because those are articles of clothing that are really vital to life.
You do also, it the book doesn't just focus on Jefferson as well, because you do put him in context. So we discover where
Washington fits into his life and where Franklin fits into his life and John Adams fits into his life.
Right. And the Marquis de Lafayette, who loved lemon cake, I think.
So there's a context that you want to put.
Well, that's what's so fabulous about studying history, is that you realize it isn't just one thing, it's everything. It's, you know, it's what's happening in Japan and what's happening in France and what's happening in Russia. You know, and all of a sudden, this tapestry gets woven together of events and relationships that you had absolutely no idea existed, or I had no idea existed. So it's fun.
You have, one of the things I learned in the book, as you say, you know nothing, and I came into this not knowing this, and I just thought it was fascinating. He grew over 15 kinds of peas.
Yes, he adored peas, as I like to point out to everybody I meet. And it's great when you go to Monticello and stand in the garden and look at the different vegetables that he grew and all the things that he experimented with. It's always inspiring to be in a garden, of course. It feeds your soul.
So when you learn that about the peas, how do you think of that visually? Then how does that manifest itself into what we see in the book?
Well, I have the garden, and then I have, because I adore lists, I make lists of many, many things. So I was able to say, aha, this is a point in the book where I have to give you a list of the peas that he liked. Because the words are really important to me, and the names are important. And, they're very poetic. The black-eyed or the cowpea, everlasting pea. I mean, that's an incredible name for a pea.
It is.
Everlasting. Prussian blue. So I love the particular details as well as the bigger philosophical ventures.
Both George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, redheads.
Right.
You wouldn't know it with the wigs. But
right, who would know the right? Like, that's right. I had to pause. I said, wait a minute. But yes, he wore the wig. But Jefferson let go of all vanity as we learn later in his life, and really just was not a dandy anymore the way he was when he was younger.
And you really go with the red hair even on the front cover of the book.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it may have been a little bit paler in real life, but artistic license. just a little bit of artistic license is allowed.
I was struck by what you said about that these are artists and that Jefferson was an artist and he was an architect and he designed and he built Monticello. So that whole there is an artistic thread that runs through his story that I assume you have to pick up on, that it doesn't escape you really at any turn, does it?
No, you're constantly impressed and amazed by the scope of his intelligence and his artistic inquisitiveness. So it's so amazing to think that there's a president who's also an architect and a musician. I mean, that's quite extraordinary and a vital part of thinking.
When you take on a project like this, are you able to work on other things, or is it your sole focus for a while?
I am working on a number of projects, and they are marinating, as we like to say, in the brain for a while. So I took I took a lot of trips to Monticello, and just collect information and collect impressions. And I like to expand over time, and then I sit down and really do the book. But there are a few things probably going on at the same time, and they really inform each other. You know, doing a New Yorker cover in the midst of a Jefferson book is very refreshing, and it just gives you another kind of jolt of a perspective. So it's good to have focus, and it's good to be a little bit flighty, I found, for me, anyway.
Is it all art by deadline? Or, I mean, I would think more so with New Yorker or less so with...
No, it's all. It's really funny. Sometimes the deadlines are elastic if you can plead the right way with your editor, and just they can feel sorry for you. I work very well to deadline, and I appreciate that connection to the real world, because as an artist, I can go off on kind of tangents of daydreaming, and it's really wonderful to be connected to real people who actually have run real businesses and say, this book needs to be delivered by this day. I really like that a lot.
I'm assuming the answer to this question is both, but I'll ask it anyway, which is, when you go to Monticello and you see an object, do you know perhaps right away that that is something that would be good for you, that's something that you would enjoy to work with in painting and telling that story? Or do you also find that you'll be home and sleeping or in the shower and you suddenly something haunts you in some way?
Well, we have to say that the shower is an incredible place of inspiration.
Absolutely.
It's so amazing that if you're stuck for an idea, just take a shower. Take a walk or take a shower, as I say. It's one of those two things. I know right away. I have a jolt of delight. I really, that's how I function in life. I have a jolt of delight when I see something that I go, that's it. Once in a while, of course, other things come up and you think, oh, maybe. But the maybes are not as often as the wow. And that happens to me a lot.
Right. And that's kind of the litmus test, right? If it wows you.
Complete. That's it. The instinct is the guide. And there's no obligatory, I must include this because of such. You have to find something that's interesting to you. Otherwise, it would be a bore.
And then when you are working on it and you are painting it, what is your feeling of being artistically true to it and respecting it, that object?
I am quite literal when I'm painting these kinds of books. I use a lot of reference, so of course I've taken pictures, and there are books and magazine articles and the photographs that exist of these things. So once I have the objects, you know, even though there's a lyrical style to my painting, I'm quite interested in representing it in the real way.
Would you do another president?
We're discussing it. We're thinking that Mr. Washington might make a good book.
Absolutely.
And I'm also taking a Lewis and Clark trip this summer, though I'm not going by canoe, I'm going by Volvo, which is, I don't know, I think I have to lift the Volvo from river to river, but I'm thinking about Lewis and Clark. We'll see what happens. It's all uncharted territory, as it was for them.
You know, oddly, it still sounds quite romantic, the Lewis and
Doesn't
Clark
it?
Trip by Volvo, yes.
Yeah, meanwhile, we'll be passing like a million miracle miles and such, but I do want to do a survey of all the donut places that are across the Oregon Trail, whatever the trail is now, whatever it's called now.
Whatever they call it
now. Whatever it is, right, whatever it is, I want to find out about the donuts there.
The new book is Thomas Jefferson, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Everything. The book comes from Penguin Young Readers Group. Mara Coleman, I thank you so much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. It's a delight.
Mara Coleman, thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Thomas Jefferson, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Everything. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.